Lightspeed Venture Partners presents Tomorrow Built Today. You can find details from this episode and more at tbtpodcast.com.
Hello, and welcome to Tomorrow Built Today, a podcast about technology, popular culture, and the extraordinary people who are transforming both. My name is Alex Tausig, and I'm a partner at Lightspeed in Silicon Valley. I'm thrilled to record this podcast today back in my hometown of New York City and to be joined by Shan Lin Ma. Shan, thanks for taking the time to speak with me.
Thanks for coming, Alex.
Shan Lin is the CEO and co-founder of Zola, the fastest growing wedding company in the country. The company has reinvented the wedding planning and registry experience for the modern couple, and over 500,000 couples have used Zola. Since its launch in 2013, Shan has raised over $40 million in venture capital, and Lightspeed led the Series C round of $25 million in December of 2016. Prior to starting her own company, Shan held senior positions at companies including Yahoo and Chloe and Isabel. Notably, she was also the first product lead at Gilt Group, where she evolved the core site experience and led the company's successful foray into mobile. She was also the creator and manager of Gilt Taste, the brand's food and wine division, and Shan has an MBA, of course, from Stanford. So Shan, I really appreciate you joining me today, and I think we should start basically by talking about weddings. Weddings are a wonderful thing. I would love to know why you decided to start with weddings and what drew you to that category in terms of building your next company.
Believe it or not, when I was growing up in my small hometown of Sydney, Australia, I actually always wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I did not know that weddings would be my path. I was always at home thinking about how can I be a part of Silicon Valley? How can I be an entrepreneur like the great entrepreneurs forming the tech industry? Fast forward to 2013, that was the year that Zola was born and was really born out of personal need. It was the year that all my friends were getting married. I was going to a lot of weddings. I was buying a lot of gifts and found both my experience buying for my friends as well as my friends' experience planning their weddings to be some of the worst online experiences around. Mm. Now at Zola, what we are building is at our core, a commerce company and a platform that's transforming the weddings industry. And I love it. The best thing about working in weddings is that you are part of the most special time in people's lives. There's a huge amount of joy and we get to participate in that. I think it's a huge honor.
It's an amazing thing. You know, you really get to come into people's lives at this very special moment. And many people get married, so they don't understand what weddings are. But I don't think a lot of people understand the business of weddings. Like, can you talk a little bit about how big the weddings business is?
Before I started Zola, I actually did not realize how huge the weddings industry is. In the US alone, it's a $90 billion market, which for context, it's the same size as the US beauty industry, and it's bigger than the global gaming industry, bigger than the global toy industry as well. So it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it's amazing. There's no one company until recently that's really taking all that on. I think we're all formed by the experiences we have in the past. And I know when you were starting Zola, a lot of decisions that you and your co-founders made came from your past experiences at Gilt Group. It would be great if you could talk a little about some of the things you learned while working at Gilt and how that influenced how you've designed the company Zola from the ground up.
Yeah, Zola absolutely is a reflection of what we saw did and did not work well during our time working at Gilt. I think Gilt succeeded in growing extremely quickly because it had a built-in demand, intent, and virality that was in the business model from day one. What I loved working there was the culture, was the high standard of the talent that I got to work alongside and learn from. But what I saw did not work as well was the business model. I saw it had issues that we've solved for at Zola. To name some of the top issues I thought about a lot was some of the high overhead costs, like inventory, photography, the cost of creative that is very high, particularly in a flash sale model. At Zola, we have a no inventory business model. We've also managed to avoid returns. Returns is often the silent killer of e-commerce. So we've done that really through product innovation, which is one of the things I'm most proud of. And on Zola, you can basically digitally exchange anything before you ever receive it, which means we have virtually no returns.
It's so interesting to think about the buying process and e-commerce experience of a wedding, because you're coming to the table looking to buy something for someone else. When someone's buying something on a registry, you're like, what are they thinking about when they go to that page? And how does Zola sort of meet them with their priorities from a product perspective?
I would say there's what the guests might have thought about on other registries before Zola launched. And then we have definitely seen guests say to us, they have a very different, very visceral reaction when they land on a Zola wedding registry. Prior to Zola, when we were first launching, Nobu, my co-founder and I, we did hundreds of interviews of both couples and their guests to really understand the psychology of these two sides that are involved in the wedding gift purchasing process. And what we learned was that guests went to registries really to try to get in and out as quickly as possible. They had a price point in mind. They had a deadline because they knew that they hopefully should buy a gift before the wedding day. And they just wanted to find that thing that was, say, $100, buy it and get out of there. That has shifted somewhat at Zola, in that while guests might come to a Zola wedding registry of their friends and family, and they might come with the intention of, I want to spend a certain amount and I want to do it quickly, we also find that the reaction that we get from guests is overwhelmingly positive because we're so different to other registries. That kind of comes across to us in three ways. One is that because Zola couples can fully personalize their registry with their photos, with commentary of why they've registered for certain things, it really is a reflection of the couple and their story. Couples take a huge amount of care personalizing their registry, making it as beautiful as the rest of their wedding. And guests love it. And they come to it and they say to both us and the couple, I never knew a registry could even look like this. The second big difference is because we let couples register for anything from products to experiences to cash, guests are often educated into what's even possible that they could buy for a couple. Like, guests will say, oh, I didn't realize I could get you an Airbnb gift card, or I could buy a puppy or contribute to your puppy fund. You know, all of this is something that is becoming now more commonplace because of Zola. And then I think the third thing is that because we are a very mobile first team, in fact, my co-founder and I have more experience in mobile than we do on the web, we do find increasingly guests want to buy from their friends' registries on their mobile device, often maybe in the car on the way to a wedding.
I know for me that has been 100% of my uses of Zola is forgetting to buy something for my friend and then getting out my phone, going on the website and doing it. And the mobile checkout experience is so important for forgetful people like me.
I have to admit, I might have also done that a couple of times. And that's exactly the thing that is easiest to do on Zola. You know, I think some other wedding registries, they barely even work on a mobile device. We designed our mobile experience to serve exactly the guest in exactly that situation. And we see it in our numbers.
Awesome. Well, speaking of numbers, you know, I think one of the interesting things about the Zola culture is how you guys combine this sort of very product-led intuition with data. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you guys measure performance of the product over time and what decisions do you make to improve it. And in addition, when the focus on customer centricity is informed by data, how do you guys keep the entire organization up to date on that stuff? Because you have so many things going on at so many different times. So that's a lot of different aspects of that question. But it's really all about how you use data-driven decision-making and product decisions and how it crosses over the company.
We are very adamant about measuring our NPS score as a product and as a company and brand. And we've done that pretty much from month one, year one of business. So now we have a great history of being able to show and look at how our NPS has gone up steadily over time and what has come through those monthly NPS surveys that we do. And I consider that the best indicator of the future success of our business. The way that we use that is in the survey, we understand why are people giving us the promoter scores and how can we, through our product, through our customer support team, through our merchandising, and every team across the company, continue to double down on the reasons why people are promoting Zola. And then, of course, we also look at the comments from the smaller group of detractors, and we systematically knock down the reasons that come up in those surveys. So really, from year one, we have seen detractor reasons go away because we've been able to focus the entire team on what we can do each month, each quarter to reduce that as a percentage of our NPS survey.
Yeah, I think you had, there was an article written that quoted you as saying something like, you have to embrace your detractors or love your detractors as much as you love your promoters.
It is the best source of information that you could ever imagine. And in running any company, it's always so hard to understand what truly can have the biggest impact on my business. And I think that detractor commentary is a gift.
One interesting thing about Zola is a lot of the executive team all worked together before. It's very unique to have a culture that has that sort of similar source of DNA. Can you talk about how the values that are built in your executive team inform your hiring strategy and how Zola competes in a very competitive hiring environment here in New York City?
I think one of the reasons that we've been able to attract some of the top talent from across different functions is because we've been able to show people who interview at Zola, this is our leadership team. And why don't you go online, you look at their LinkedIn profiles, and you can see if you join Zola, you will be learning from the best leaders in every function. And on the leadership team, because we've worked together before, we chose to work together again. We appreciated the culture that each person was able to bring to the team. And frankly, we're able to learn which bits of the past culture we did not like and talk very often about how do we avoid some of those cultural pitfalls. For example, I'll talk about something that we did like at Gilt that we wanted to make sure we amplify here at Zola, which is really a very entrepreneurial environment. I got to benefit from that hugely and learn a great deal of that myself at Gilt, where I got to pitch and launch my own business unit, which was Gilt Taste, got to then run that as the GM and kind of grow from being a product leader into a business leader. And I tell many of my team here that there's nothing I would love more than to see people at Zola kind of do the same, take on more, different entrepreneurial projects. And we live that.
That's great. That's great. Why do you think it is that so many Gilt alumni have gone on to do their own thing? I could probably name a dozen different startups here in New York that are founded by former Gilt alumni. Mm-hmm. I think we have three in our portfolio. It was Zola, Daily Harvest, and HQ. Uh-huh. And that's just in the Lightspeed portfolio. So, yeah. I mean, why do you think that is?
I think part of it was that Gilt was one of the earliest tech consumer-facing startups in New York. And it was an environment which was able to attract anyone that was looking to do that kind of work when there really weren't that many other great companies that you could join. So I think it was, one, a little bit of self-selection bias. Two, the experience of working there was a great one. And so it made us all, I think, want to do it again, to learn from it and improve from it. Personally, I do feel that people who work there have kind of a bit of a head start, a competitive advantage in understanding what might be the next iteration or the future of retail and of e-commerce. And certainly, I think the reason why Zola has been so successful is that because many of us here ran the dropship platform at Gilt, when we were building it again ourselves, it's kind of one of the core advantages of Zola, we could do it with many years of learnings of how to build that platform the right way.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about the future of retail, because it's something that we think about a lot. And, being in the registry business, you have a frontline seat to what's happening specifically in department stores and home goods, which have suffered a lot in the last 5 years. Why do you think Zola is growing so fast when in general that the department store segment and the home goods segment are suffering so much in retail?
I could talk about retail and what we think is going to happen in retail in the next decade for hours. but let me try to keep it short and say, I believe the future of retail is really the shift towards a more dynamic inventory model, and where we see a lot of retailers, and particularly we've experienced this in our past startups, suffer is that this constant cycle of changing seasonal inventory that is very capital intensive is one that is a hard cycle to break. And so in our shift towards Zola here, blending that commerce and marketplace model, I believe we have a head start of that in the retail industry, but many will follow that model. the millennial generation who are the ones really leading the charge and spending a critical mass online just simply demand different online experiences, mobile shopping experiences, and understanding and building for that generation, I think will then serve retailers in being able to capture both millennials, but also the generations that follow them. And I do not see retail, the bigger retailers doing that today. And really it's being led by the startup environment.
How much of it is millennials don't want to go to stores versus these particular retailers do not have the stuff millennials want to buy versus millennials buy less stuff anyway? They like experiences more. Like, which of these factors do you think, or is it all of these factors that are playing into it?
I have a bit of a contrarian view in that I do not believe it is the reason that these stores do not have what millennials want, because the biggest stores do have the same product that millennials are buying through other channels. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, I think it is the experience. It is one that is not, the stores today are not being tailored specifically for that audience. And so when you go in there, you are buying the experience as much as you're buying the product. And while that experience might have served older generations when those stores were being started, it is not speaking to younger generations today. And that is the big opportunity in retail.
What have you seen the retailers do that are embracing this trend? Like in your opinion, who's doing it right? And what are some of the strategies that some of these retailers can implement to perhaps, you know, integrate some of the best practices from a company like Zola or other great online companies?
I think the best retailers are really using data over intuition. And I think intuition has informed retail merchandising strategies for decades, whereas data is the future of merchandising. So there are certainly retailers who are using data to get very granular, curated assortments by store location. And that is one example of what some players may be doing right. I haven't seen people take it fully all the way, which is how do you use that data to get even more personal with that individual customer on whichever device they might be touching you on. And that is where, you know, technology companies have been leading, and I think show the best example of being able to do that today.
You know, sitting here in New York, you know, I'm cognizant of the fact that, you know, Zola is one of the more notable companies in this ecosystem. You've been in this ecosystem for about 10 years now, really starting, I guess, in the depths of the recession, coming up now, longest bull market in probably ever in the United States. How have you seen the tech ecosystem here change over time? What major differences have you seen, and how are you feeling about it at this moment in time?
I was just telling a newer product manager last week that back in my day in 2008, when I was a young product person, I moved from Silicon Valley to New York to take the role as the first product leader at Gilt. And I moved to New York. I was dressed very badly, but I was very excited to try and find other product leaders within the New York ecosystem to exchange ideas, share best practices with. And it was really hard to find another product person. There just weren't that many, particularly in fast-growing consumer startups. I really had to form my own group. and it was not a big group. Fast forward 10 years, that is drastically different. There are tech meetups almost every night where you could find hundreds of thousands of people within that exact role, all doing great, building great things. And so the support network has changed in a huge way. I think the other big change is that a lot of the people that have been working in tech in New York in some of those earlier companies, like, you know, Gilt, for example, have grown up, become more experienced, learned, and are now the senior leadership of newer companies. And so the depth of talent is significantly different. I would say the last thing is that the funding environment in New York is drastically different, even in the last 4 years that Zola has been around. So when we launched in 2013, met with a number of investors, the reality is not many of them were in New York. Certainly tried to find some, more in New York, but it was hard. Mm-hmm. And now you walk out on the street and you find five.
You can throw a rock and hit a venture capitalist. It's amazing. They're all over the place, like the rats in the subway.
No comment.
Yeah. Well, I won't comment. We won't talk about the state of the MTA, by the way. That's a whole other discussion. Well, I want to wrap things up, but with sort of a question about Zola in the future. I mean, what do you think is going to happen the year ahead, next couple of years? Like, what are your ambitions for the company? Where would you like to be in the next couple of years with Zola?
What we're all excited about is really building the platform that helps couples, serves couples from the day they get engaged through that first year of marriage. It's such a huge, stressful, important life change. And we believe that today, when couples can transition from single to engaged to marriage, they probably have to use over 20 different apps and services and tools to navigate that. Frankly, those 20 tools aren't necessarily built for weddings. They aren't that great. And it shouldn't have to be that way. I think it's kind of insulting that people still have to do that. Zola should be the single road that people can take to get from engaged to marriage. And we can do that.
Awesome. Well, I hope you do. This has been really terrific, Shan. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I've really enjoyed our chat. I'm sure our listeners have as well.
Thank you.
And if you enjoyed the show, please go to your podcasts app or wherever else you find these things and subscribe to Tomorrow Built Today to hear interviews and conversations with more amazing people like Shan. Thanks, and talk to you soon.
This podcast is produced by Lightspeed Venture Partners. For more details on this episode, head over to tbtpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.